over Baghdad has been illuminated. We're seeing bright flashes going on all over the sky.
Welcome to Radio Contra, the podcast of American Partisan. I'm your host, NC Scout, and I had the distinct honor of interviewing Mr. Matt Robertson of Everyday Marksman. Matt Robertson is an Air Force vet, he's an Air Force officer, and he brings a very good perspective on training as a civilian and being a former military. And it was really cool to interview him because we talked about topics that are questions a lot of you out there have, whether it's where to begin when we don't know where to begin, what topics are relevant for civilians, what things should we be focusing on, and maybe some things are not as important. And one of the big things is just another guy's perspective on building a competent and ready preparedness group, that Patriot Fire Team, and really just keeping people engaged. Not going to lie to you, times are getting very, very uncertain. And not to take too much of a nonchalant tone about it, but we have to focus right now on what's important. And that's keeping a level head, getting your people together, keeping them engaged. And don't focus so much on the headlines each day, because the news isn't going to be very good. I can promise you that. But focus on the people that are around you. With that said, this podcast is brought to you by Primary Arms. Good optics. The ACSS reticle is truly revolutionary and remains one of my favorites. One of the most dead nuts simple reticles to use out there, especially if you are training those civilians up for a potential fight. And Palmetto State Armory. My friends over at Palmetto State Armory make great AR-15s all in-house. Go check them out. And you're going to need ammo. Natchez Shooter Supply has got some of the best deals running on ammo right now. Yesterday, I picked up 1,000 rounds of 7.62x39 for $197 shipped. You heard that right. Under $200 shipped out the door. That's a deal you can't beat. And Natchez Shooter Supply has got a bunch of other stuff too, whether it's optics, whether it's ammo, whether it's magazines, whether it's game calls, deals on camo, both military surplus and hunting supplies, everything you need in one house. They've been a very good resource of mine for about a decade now. I bought stuff from them, and I'm really proud to be an affiliate for them. And with that said, I'm going to turn it over to our interview. And we're live. Sitting here, great honor to be talking to. He is the and head mofo in charge of the Everyday Marksman. And that's a pretty cool site. It's focused on civilian needs, civilian requirements, a civilian approach to firearms training. I've been following them for a good amount of time now, and I think that what they have going on over there and their approach to things is one that is very applicable to the questions a lot of you out there have been asking of me. And I think that what they're doing is very, very important. I think the training program that he's put together and keeping his people engaged is really cool. But with that said, Matt, how are you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
So what brought you to
everyday marksman to civilian side training. And if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself before everyday marksman and kind of how this came about.
Sure. So it's kind of like being a mosquito on a nude beach. You know what you're supposed to do, but not really where to start. So I suppose I should probably go way back into the middle school. So I've been a lifelong gun nerd. So I say my first time actually was you always remember your first, seventh grade. And I went to the range with a friend of mine, my best friend. His dad was a Vietnam era Green Beret. And we went to the range. He gave me the safety briefing, everything. And he hands me a 10-22 and we're plinking away. I'm not hitting anything. And so he's like, all right, you got the basics. Let's try this. And he hands me a Springfield 1903 without telling me that this is a significantly different feel than a 10-22. And it bounces off my shoulder, cracks me in the jaw, and I've been hooked ever since. So that's nice. Kind of where it started.
Nice.
Then all through high school, I was the guy playing paintball with my friends, just kind of running around the woods, having fun. And then got into Air Force ROTC on scholarship. And then I remember it was my senior year of college where things kind of took a serious turn. Because I was still interested in guns, enjoyed it, didn't own any. But I was living in South Florida. And that year we got hit by several hurricanes back to back, one being Katrina. Most famous New Orleans, but living in South Florida, we got hit pretty hard too. And then shortly after that was Wilma. And we didn't have power for a couple of weeks. And one of those nights actually was Halloween. And I remember waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning, pounding on our front door. And we were living in a duplex. And pound, pound, pound. I ignore it. And I'm sleeping on a couch in the front room. Pound, pound, pound. And I go into the door. And here's a cop shining a flashlight in my face. I see yellow caution tape everywhere. Like lights flashing. And I was just like, oh, what's going on here? Immediately smell the smell of marijuana smoke. So apparently, long story short, was that someone had broken into our next door neighbor's front door and stabbed them 8 times right in the front room.
Oh, wow.
And I remember it was all of us started thinking, like, had that been our door, that would have been a very different situation. I mean, we had firearms in the house, but I mean, I was the one at the front room. And the response time when you don't have power in South Florida after a hurricane is not very high. At that point, everybody's cell phones had been drained. We didn't have a landline. Like, what were you going to do? So that was kind of my first exposure to, you should probably be thinking about these contingencies. And then I joined the military officially, commissioned in, became a specialist in nuclear weapons, lived all over the place out west, places like Montana, where we had blizzards and crazy amounts of snow. And again, you'd lose power. You'd kind of be isolated. You were on your own. If you broke down the side of a highway, you were going to be there for a while. And you needed to kind of learn to rely on yourself. So, you know, things go on. I've become a trainer in the Air Force, military, and then the day comes where I get out and start working the civilian job. And I remember at that point, I'd been running a blog for a while, just to document my shooting, almost like a journal, because I wanted to get better at shooting sports. But I remember there was a day. I was in my office, and one of my coworkers, who is a born and raised city guy, and we're talking about, ironically, what happens if there's a pandemic or a societal problem, and we're just kind of spitballing ideas. And he knows a little about my background. And I remember when we started talking about it, I laid out my plans, like, oh yeah, you just try to keep, you know, X amount of resources around. I train firearms and practice because that's a perishable skill, you know, and I try to make sure communications are up with my family. How am I going to get around? And I remember asking what he would do. And he looked at me and he kind of smiled sarcastically. And then he said, well, I'm just going to probably sit in my apartment and die. And what struck me about that was that he's not alone, that people just don't know that they can go learn this stuff. And it's not like, you know, some of the stuff that I learn and practice, marksmanship and kind of basic survival skills and communications, these aren't like black magic. It's just something you have to go take the initiative to learn. And sometimes it takes somebody to point you in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man. And you know, one of the biggest difficulties that people who come to me continuously say is keeping people engaged, keeping them, they put together a preparedness group, or, you know, what I call an LGOP, little group of preppers. And, you know, they run into those issues. I mean, it's like hot and heavy for about 6 months, and then it starts to taper off. You know, the guys get disinterested. They find other reasons not to do stuff. And, you know, one of the things that I think keeps people engaged is constant awareness of just how fragile a lot of things are. You know, and what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think that's absolutely right. I think there's kind of two problems there, right? The first one is people are very short-sighted. Like, they look at short-term goals most of the time. So it's easy. I'll use fitness as an example for this one. It's easy to point out to somebody, you know, if I eat that piece of rotten food, I'm probably going to get sick. So they won't eat it. It's much more difficult if it's, you need to eat healthier every day so that you're going to be around here in 20 years and kicking butt. Right. Or if you shouldn't be eating that junk in the break room every day because you're going to get diabetes. And then if something bad happens in 5 years, you're going to be out of luck. Like, when you push goals out that far, the immediate needs seem so much more important to them. So you can start off hot and heavy. Hey, this is going to go. We're going to do it. We're going to do it. But then when things don't happen, they kind of pivot towards, well, what else do I want to do short term? And so that makes it really hard.
And the civilians, because, I mean, in the military, you know, your Air Force and me in the Army, you know, you have expectations of you. You have to maintain a certain level of fitness. You have to be in the gym. You have to be putting those boots on the pavement, you know, and actually putting the time in. Or they're not going to keep you around.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and when it comes to civilian life, you ain't got that, man. Yeah, you ain't got that.
There's nobody standing over your shoulder being like, you better pass that PT test or else. So, I mean, and I ranch that. I mean, I think everybody gains a few pounds afterwards. I'm still fighting that one off. But I mean, so besides just the fitness side of it, I think the shooting side is the same thing. And I think from an engagement standpoint, too, it's what I keep running into with the people I interview and the things I write about is that it's easy to spend money. It's easy to spend money on stuff, but as soon as you have to put in the work to actually get better at it, like, I need to go spend, not just go buy that great new optic, but I got to go put in, you know, 500 hours of basic marksmanship training. That's when people start backing away. And the trick is, how do you overcome that? You got to make it fun.
Yeah, I mean, and that's absolutely correct, because I'll get a variety of emails on a regular basis, you know, which all boil down to tell me what to buy. And, you know, whether it's combo, you know, and I tell people, okay, you know, this is the equipment you need. You know, if you're looking at a very basic analog setup, then, you know, with minimal investment, because none of us are made of money, then, you know, Baofeng is a good way to go. But to understand its limitations. And further, you know, don't be that guy that buys, you know, 50 of them off of Alibaba or wherever and sticks them in an ammo can. Like, dude, you have no idea what you're doing. You know, what do you think, that they're just going to magically work when you pull them out of the ground? And firearms are the same way. You know, just because I have a piece of equipment does not mean that I know how to use it. And more importantly, I know how to master it. You know, and when we talk about carbines, that's a world of difference between that and pistol, and then the competitive realm versus the realities of combat. You know, there's quite a bit of difference there as well. And so to your point about people wanting to just go out and spend the money, dude, that's absolutely correct. You know, so my next question is, when it comes to training as a civilian, because it's difficult to find that motivation. It's difficult a lot of times, and there's not that many opportunities to go out and run through some of the same things that we did when we were in the dot mil side. So when it comes to civilian training, what are some of your takeaways from that that you've learned over time?
I mean, for me, I mean, I kind of look at it as a multi-pronged approach, right? So, obviously, I think basic safe fundamentals with a firearm is always going to be valuable, and that's there's always a place for that. Just really good execution of those basics. I think where I think a lot of people go wrong in training is they will become tourists of various schools of thought of weapons handling, and that's fun, and you're going to learn a lot of cool things. But at some point along the way, you're learning variations of the same technique, then there's still so much more you could learn. So to me, I think once you have those fundamentals, you want to start looking at how do you work with other people, right? Actually good teamwork, small unit tactics kind of stuff. And that's yeah. much harder to find.
Yeah.
And then from there, it's like, what other skills matter? So communications, I will admit, like I actually inspired by you. And a lot of what you've written over the years is I went and got my tech license last year. Huh? And I've done nothing with it because I don't know what I don't know. And my little handheld doesn't have enough power. So, but I got that kind of question.
Right,
people say,
man.
Like, why do you want to get that tech license? Go ahead.
I was going to say getting a license, you took the test, you memorized the answers, you do the ham cram. But the real learning comes doing it, the working
right.
knowledge.
Right. And I get questions like that, like comments on my posts about learning radio. It's like, well, why should I worry about getting the license? If when it all goes up, then the license doesn't matter. My answer is, well, it's not just going to work because you have it. You have to know what you're doing. And I admit, I don't know what I'm doing. I need to go learn. I need to go find an Elmer.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's becoming harder and harder to do as well. And, people think, especially when it comes to combo, people are under the impression that it works just like it does in them. And the analog to that in firearms is, in the movies, the good guys mark with his bullets, they magically just go everywhere you want them to go. And that radio never, ever fails. And the reality behind that is quite the opposite. People will learn that that range on that little $25 handheld doesn't do what they thought it was going to do. And one of the issues that hams have and they run into is that, especially on VHF and UHF, the local network stuff, is they're all very reliant on repeaters. There's very, very little, or at least few and far in between, simplex or peer-to-peer. Mm-hmm. If I was to say for people not in the combat world, peer-to-peer communications, there's not a whole lot of that. And it's not the most user-friendly thing in the world because all of the variables that makes your equipment work are 100% on you, and your working knowledge. So if you don't have the underlying skill, hey man, then when we start talking about HF, it's a whole other mountain of a learning curve there. And it's not one that you're just going to pick up overnight, especially in, say a grid down situation or an extended panic hysteria, like, after the two hurricanes, Katrina and Wilma hit in Florida. Do you think anybody was out there magically learning how to use ham radio?
Nope, not at all. But it's a funny story with that one, though, is what we did learn from that is, it was a house, our whole house is full of was Air Force dudes, a lot of former Boy Scouts, including myself. So while other people were panicking, we just chopped up some wood and built fires in our front yard, pulled out the couches and cooked food, and we were good for 2 weeks. So that even just a little bit of knowledge can go a long way.
Yeah, man. And that's another good point. What would you say that the prerequisite skills for a well-rounded civilian pressure be?
A well-rounded civilian. I mean, of course, I'm going to take the angle of I came to all this through the marksmanship angle, and I've got a lot of kind of reasons for that. To go back to Jeff Cooper, I think people who have the discipline for good marksmanship tend to be better quality people. because it's a discipline and hard work thing. But I think solid, just
yes.
patience and discipline from marksmanship is good. I think knowing how to actually work with a team, because there's a guy I followed who made the point one time that like a lot of these guys who are hardcore preppers, they can have a year's worth of supplies, but it's just them. So what happens when they're home alone and somebody else knows they're there and they have five guys roll up on their house? Like, you need friends. You can't stay awake the whole time. So you need to work with, you need to know how to work with people. And I think honestly, physical fitness is a huge one to me. And as someone who's not been great with this, throughout my life, it's something I'm constantly trying to work on, but I'm trying to work on it. And I think a lot of people just kind of assume, I'm sure you've probably seen this before, is, oh, I'm going to be the guy on my front porch with a long range rifle. I don't need to get in shape. And that's just the wrong attitude. Not the least of which is if you're not practicing either. So a funny story in this one, as I interviewed one of the top PRS shooters in the country recently. And the topic came up of what calibers he shot, because everybody wants to talk calibers. And we got in this conversation about picking the right caliber, because everybody on the internet loves to talk about pick the right caliber, pick the right action. And in the course of the conversation, he said, I went through five barrels last year. And I just kind of stopped and went, adding up in my head, there's probably three, four thousand rounds per barrel. And he went through five of them. Like, that's 20,000 actual shots down the tube he did last year. The average person on the internet debating like what's the best caliber for me to buy is probably never going to go through that in 10 years.
No. And you have to constantly enforce the fundamentals. There's no magic voodoo out there that is going to make you a better shooter. There is no, like, okay, so in the long range world, 6.5 is just tearing it up. So if you want to be competitive in the F class world, or any precision rifle world, competition circuits, you have to at a minimum be running 6.5 Creedmoor. Now, the reality behind that is if you're a crappy shooter, it doesn't matter what caliber you're, because if you don't have the prerequisite skill, then the rest is irrelevant. You can throw money at it all you want, but you are not going to build skill by simply throwing money at gear. So that's a critical point, man.
Yeah. And that goes back to people who want to spend money to solve the problem versus putting in the work. So to me, like, go back to the original question here, was the things I look for in a well-rounded, prepared citizen, it would be basic tactical skill. So marksmanship, and you can work with the team, good physical fitness, and probably I would just say just a beginner's mindset that you're always willing to learn something new, because you're gonna.
Yeah, man, that is critical. I've had the blessing to have a lot of very talented individuals come through the class. And a few weeks ago, I had a carbine course I was running. There was a kid in there, and by when I say kid, I mean he's late teens. He was an adult, but he's in his late teens. And the motivation that he had to learn and his willingness to learn was a huge breath of fresh air. I have a lot of great students. Every class I thank them, because it's always an amazing crowd. And I've had, I've had some people that needed a little bit more work than others, especially in the teamwork department. But having that motivation to learn, man, is just, because, correct me if I'm wrong, if your experience differs, but when in the Army, I always knew that somebody coming to the units that I was in was going to be a good guy if they kept their mouth shut and were just willing to learn, and they were more adept at getting by and grasping the skills and fitting into the team.
Yeah, I think that's true. So the community I came from, fairly small. So at that point, you already had a reputation in front of you. So if you showed up like talking about your reputation that we all already knew, then okay, that's not really doing you any favors.
Yeah, yeah. The guy that's the subject matter expert, and or so he says, he's becomes popular for all the wrong reasons, quick, fast, and in a hurry. So you mentioned that in your grid down situation, which was a pretty doggone serious one, back when you were in college, what were the survival skills that you saw, aside from what you already mentioned, but from your teammates, the guys that you were living with, what were the survival skills that really carried you through and that you think civilians should master?
So I think that situation, right? I think we like to imagine, I know I personally, I fell in this bucket. We like to imagine like I'm going to wander off into the woods and bushcraft my way through. And I think that's kind of romantic in a way,
yeah.
But you know, living in Miami,
Jeremiah Johnson.
Yeah. But you know, living in Miami that, you know, I'm not going to wander off in the Everglades. That's probably not going to work out for me. So I think the skills that actually were helpful for us was just learning how to be resourceful, looking at any given item and thinking, what are the multiple ways I could use this? And then knowing basics, right? Knowing how to start a fire, you know, and I practice how to start fires without lighters? Yeah, but it doesn't mean I'm not going to have a lighter with me if I have the chance. So just knowing how to correctly build a fire and then use it for something useful. I think another one was just situational awareness. And I mean, it's hard to say that one in the context of that whole incident, 3 o'clock in the morning, like everybody's asleep. You didn't expect someone's going to kick in the door, which again, didn't happen to me. It
right.
was neighbors.
Right.
But I mean, for the most part, it's like there's no power. So there's no streetlights or anything. So if you're outside, you should be paying attention. And then we made some pretty fundamental security problems that night. That night that particular incident happened, turns out our side door was unlocked. Didn't know.
Oh man.
So you know,
I mean,
a lot of learning
points. Locks only keep out honest people.
Yeah, that's true. So
you would have heard somebody trying to come in.
Yeah, I think yeah, but I think from that case, I think it's being resourceful was the big ones for that situation. We didn't have to be constructing shelters on the fly. We didn't have to be doing anything like super fancy stuff. I still enjoy doing because I love the outdoors and camping. But for that one, I think the big survival one was just the mindset of being aware of what's going on and then being resourceful.
Yeah. Because part of the reality of that experience is going to be the same for a lot of folks, unfortunately in their own survival situations, and it's scenario dependent, but here in the United States, you're always going to have a building. Mm-hmm. You're always going to have a house, whether it's abandoned or whatever. You're always going to have hard structures. Does that mean you shouldn't know how to build a shelter? No, you should. You should know the fundamentals. Should be situational awareness is something that I have found has been incredibly difficult to is one of those things that once you gain it, it's like a flick of a switch. It never goes away. Mm-hmm. It's a mindset. It's a practice, that you get into, simple things like when you go to Walmart or Target or wherever, do you look at where the security cameras are? Because if I were a criminal, I would think about it. That is like, where are the seams and gaps where I could get away with shoplifting or whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. But as a prepared, situationally aware, I have those security cameras watching me. I want them. I want to be in their field of view in case something happens to me. There's a remote witness. Even if there's nobody else on that aisle but me and my assailant, the camera's still, it's simple things like that. It's like, when you're out, don't always park in well-lit areas, always back into your parking spot, arrive 15 minutes early, and surveil the parking lot before you go into a place. Mm-hmm. You know, simple things like situational awareness, or that pertain to situational awareness. What training courses have you taken as a civilian that had the biggest impact on you?
So, I mean, I've done a smattering of like your marksmanship and competition and kind of tactical stuff. Not going to be dropping names or anything, but like, I think the one that actually had the biggest impact on me was, because I didn't get to do it when I was active duty, not part of my career field. So the biggest one for me was actually a small unit tactics one. Right. And that was where it really hit home to me that the basics of weapons handling are really the most important. And after that, it's how well do you work with those around you? Because it became a very obvious, like, eye-opening experience to see what it actually means to shoot, move, communicate. And this was on a very basic level, you know, at what it means actually have to like coordinate who's moving and when. How are you going to yell over the sound of everybody firing their guns and make sure the next person knows what they have to do? That was extremely impactful to me. And I mean, I haven't gotten to follow that one up and do anything extra, but I know that one just kind of really drove home the idea to me that it's not about you. You know, it's not about me. It's about us.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And you know, in my own carbine class that I run, I follow that philosophy. You know, in a 2-day class, I'll have them move as a team on the second day. And you have to begin to realize things like, oh, crap, my buddy is reloading. Mm-hmm. So I can't be reloading at the same time. You know, and those are things that when you're moving individually, when you're working individually, or you're in a individually focused class, whether it's carbine class or what have you, you're not going to get that. You don't get that level of mindset of awareness, you know.
And even just little things, like things you don't think about when you're working by yourself, because like I'm sure you've seen this more so than I have, but you know, when it comes to like, all right, we're going to bound. All right. Well, what does it actually mean to have a reasonable bound? Cause like one of my partners, he was a retired Lieutenant Colonel Marine. And, you know, I was fresh out of the Air Force, you know, mid 30s. So for me, a bound was much further than he can move in a bounds. Now I just screwed him over because I'm way ahead of him. So now we have to figure out how to, you know, make that work.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, moving to cover is a big deal too. I've found that a lot of people, they kind of get lost in that whole moving to cover because they're used to watching YouTube. And something I said over the weekend, I had a class over the weekend, and I said, we were talking about some different topics, and I said, you know, watching things is for entertainment, you know, but doing things is building a skill. You know, if I watch a video, even if it's for an instructional video, you have to realize that watching something is a form of entertainment. Doing something is a form of skill building, whether it's that muscle memory that you're building, you know, there is no replication, or rather, I should say, there is no building skill by sitting on your ass. Yeah. You know, you're not going to do it, man. You're just not, you can't get something by just reading a book. You can't get something. You can't master a skill, by sitting on your ass and watching a video. Like you have to be doing it.
I think honestly, this is a bigger problem right now. Culturally, we've got that because like you said, it's about entertainment, right? So, you have social media influencers who can shoot really well in front of the camera, but the tactics they're using are meant for speed and entertainment. And then the problem is there's no context to that. So you'll see people be like, this is how it's done. And then they'll watch a video of an actual trainer demonstrating something slowly and be like, you're so slow. And it's like, you're missing the context here.
Yeah. Yeah, or standing still, the same ones, the same social media influence, and burn down, you know, do a mag dump, you're standing still, you know. So you might put five rounds on a stationary target in, you know, half a second. Hey, man, that's cool. But you're standing still, you're not moving to cover, you're not, you know, like we don't exist in a one-on-one gunfight. Like, we haven't fought like that since 1865. So, you know, on a certain level, that's important in a basic, in a basic context of being able to, get that sight picture and put those rounds on target, but you have to evolve past that. And just as you said, with the context behind it, there has to be a context. And a lot of times you're not going to get it because those videos are there to entertain us rather than teach a skill.
Right, exactly. And that's, I know, to come back to earlier questions, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I do like what I do. I didn't come to my blog by like to be a teacher. I came to it because I wanted to write, right? But because like my coworker said, I'm just going to sit in my apartment and die, you know, and then people I've met along the way, I've realized that there's a lot of people would benefit from like even just the self-confidence of learning this stuff. And that means getting out there to do it. So that's why we have the challenges that we have where it's like, all right,
yeah,
your challenge this month, you know, is to go build a fire without using a lighter and boil water on it. That's all you have to do. Or it's going to be, hey, you need to go ruck 30 miles. Within 30 days with 30 pounds in your pack. Just do that. Just get out there and do it. That's the point to me, is just get people doing something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They have to, because again, you're not gaining skill by sitting on your ass. You have to get out there and do something. Oh, a big thing with something that I talked about fairly is getting out and teaching those skills, you know, because the training, you know, being and all that stuff, man, the market for that is wide open. But not only is it wide open as a market, but it's the fact that you don't really master a skill until you begin teaching it. You know, a black belt really only masters a martial art until they start teaching it to others, so they start running their own dojo. You know, and because of that, you have to begin to teach those skills to others to really master it yourself. And as a developmental process, that's very important. And that's why, you know, I encourage everybody who has a unique skill, that has a skill set. I've had a number of people that have come and taught for me, and I've invited them to it. And, you know, it's not about profiteering off of anything, or it's not about making money necessarily. It's the fact that you need to foment people building that skill and building that skill inside of them and constantly learning and mastering it.
And I think there's confidence that comes with that too. Like that's what helps people become better themselves, is they feel like they can take back some control in their life when things are bad. Well, at least they know how to do whatever. It's just a confidence builder.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I couldn't agree more. So one last question for you, and you're going to laugh at this one, maybe. What's your ideal weapon setup? Like the boogaloo is kicked off and it's time for Matt to you know, gather the goons and go out and do hood rat shit. We're grabbing, man.
Can I only have one?
Yeah. Only one, man. Only, well, we'll say carbine and pistol and knife.
Ooh, oh, gotta throw the knife in there too. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, it's funny because I was having a conversation the other day about how much I really enjoy my 20-inch AR with a collapsible stock, my A5. But in reality, having used that in a couple of classes, is its smoothness and how much I love shooting it. It is a heavy sucker. So I'm thinking I would probably lean towards. for like a 90% usage, something with a, I'm not going to say like a pencil barrel would be good, but more of a taper barrel, like something like the Faxon Gunner style where it kind of tapers down. So something in that probably 16 to 18 inches. If I got to pick one, we'll say 16. Flash hider.
Yeah.
I would probably, to be honest, probably for an optic, I would probably run something like a, one of the lightweight ACOGs, like the TA-33. As much as I love shooting with variables, I think there's a lot to be said for something that's just rugged and small and lightweight, and gives you just the right balance between magnification and speed. Collapsible stock, I love the A5 system, so I'd probably take an A5 buffer. And I don't know. I had to go down the trigger details, too. I got to nerd out that hard. I'd probably say something like a Geissele SSA in there. I'd call it good.
Stupid. Oh, man, Geissele. Yes, that's what I've got in my SPR. And that's a good choice.
Oh, yeah.
That is a good choice. That's
I've got the gamut of those things, man. I got the SSA, the E model, the SD E model. I have a LaRue as well, the MBT, which I like a lot, but I almost feel that one's a little, that's good for SPR work for me. So, yeah, I'd probably stick with the SSA. Yeah. All right. So that was carbine.
Right on. Oh, that's a good choice.
And a sling, of course. But
wait. Yeah. All right. Of course.
All right. So pistol.
Of course.
You know, I have spent the most time competing with my Beretta. It's a 92A1. I'm very comfortable with it. But if I weight matters.
I don't.
So I
even they're not light.
I carry a CZ most of the time, one of the P models. But if we're talking the Boogaloo and I gotta find spare parts.
Handgun.
I don't even own one, I would probably take a Glock just because they're that common. 9mm.
Yeah.
And compact enough to conceal. So 19. All right, so there's a pistol. Knife. So this is my one knife, huh?
Yo, Glock 19. Yeah.
All right. For the one knife, I'm probably going to take my Becker BK-10. 1090.
That's a good choice, too.
Yeah, so 1095 steel, so easy to sharpen, holds an edge well. Carbon steel, so I can spark a ferro rod with it. I don't necessarily care that it's a clip point. I'd rather have a drop point on it. But it is what it is. It just feels nice in the hand. It carries well in the belt, and I can use it for lots of other tasks, from fine work because it's got a nice tip to it, to wood processing if I have to do that. So yeah, that'd be my choice.
That's a really good choice on a knife. Becker knives are just really, really well made. The older ones, the Camillus ones, before K-Bar bought them out. K-Bar actually bought the Becker line out, and then Camillus kind of went by the wayside. I think they were bought by a Chinese company. But anyway, great knives, man. And the K-Bar variant of them, they have just taken that line and really ran with it. And they're putting out some good stuff, man. And Ethan Becker, I don't know if you've ever seen any interviews with him, but he's a cool dude too, man. He's was a chef, big outdoors enthusiast, survival enthusiast. My favorite salt pack, day pack, bushcraft pack, whatever, is actually a Becker patrol pack.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And you know, which are and that's, man, I'm gonna tell you, it's cool stuff. It's cool stuff, and Becker knives are always welcome around here. Well, brother, it has been great talking to you. I really appreciate you sitting down and talking to us, man. Any last thoughts?
No, I appreciate what you're doing. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah, bro. Anytime. Well, anyway, stay healthy. You know, don't don't drink too much Corona and get the virus. If you got a 401k, cash that thing out, put it in precious metals, specifically lead. But seriously, man, stay safe, and I will talk to you soon.
Great. Have a great one.